Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Vanished ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
He had enough stuff with him that he would be good for probably 2 months or more that he had taken with him. Like, he had everything from food to sewing kits and first aid kits. And I'm still a little baffled on how he got it all in the kayak. He had so much stuff. Everything that you would need to basically live, he had with him, you know?
On Sunday, July 9th, 2017, 32-year-old Jason McGrath set out to go kayaking in Cape George, Nova Scotia. When Jason didn't return, his family contacted the RCMP to report him missing. They quickly located Jason's kayak on the opposite side of St. George's Bay, and they believed that Jason had made it to land because the kayak was pulled a good distance out of the water. Extensive searches were conducted in the area, but no trace of Jason has ever been found. Since Jason's disappearance, his family has been very conflicted regarding what may have happened. You see, Jason had always dreamed of living alone on a deserted island. He even studied how to survive in the wilderness. Was Jason the victim of an unfortunate accident, or could he still be out there? I'm Marissa, and from Wondery, this is episode 120 of The Vanished, the story of Jason McGrath's disappearance. Audible offers thousands of popular favorites, exclusive new series, guided wellness programs, comedy, and exciting new voices and audio. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. The Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, doing chores, you decide. I like to listen a little bit each evening while I'm cooking dinner, and it's great for my evening walks too. Recently, I've been listening to Lay Them to Rest by Laura Norton. It's a fantastic audiobook. You don't want to miss it. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. That's audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. I was contacted recently by a couple of Jason's family members asking if I would consider covering his case. I know many of you listening are from Canada and look forward to hearing some of these stories that are a bit closer to home for you. I started looking into Jason's case, and it immediately interested me because he had this desire to go live alone in the wilderness, and then one day he just disappeared. People go missing while exploring the wilderness all over the world because often the most beautiful places on Earth possess their own unique dangers ranging from extreme weather or terrain to predatory wildlife. In order to experience these wild, beautiful places, we often have to take risks. Nova Scotia is one of Canada's maritime provinces. It's surrounded by the Atlantic Ocean. Jason went missing while exploring one of Nova Scotia's many bays called St. George's Bay. This is a large body of water, more than 20 miles or 33 kilometers across in many areas. A very important part of this story is that Jason is a really unique person. He loved the outdoors and dreamed of living on a deserted island. His brother Kevin explained to me that while Jason was close with his family, he liked to keep to himself. He lived a really reclusive life.
He liked to be alone. He didn't really like to be around people too much. His family was okay, like immediate family, but he preferred to be alone most of the time if he could. He didn't go too far from home, and he always had a grand plan. He was just going to leave someday and go to a deserted island and never be bothered again by anyone. He'd be the kind of person, if you left in the woods, he'd probably make friends with most of the animals, and he would figure out a way. Like, he used to get up in the morning every day and bake bread for the squirrels. Our parents now live in our grandparents' house in town, and he stayed at their old property, so Yeah, but every morning he would make bread for the squirrels and feed them on the deck. And he'd have deer coming right up to the doorstep. Probably every day there used to be half a dozen deer on his lawn. And he could get within feet of them. Like, he just wasn't a threat to anything. And it seems like the critters around him knew that. Pretty delicate person, we'll say. But at the same time, he'd do anything for you if you wanted him to do it. You just had to go pick him up and he'd go do it for you.
Not only was Jason very connected with nature, he also studied how to survive in the wilderness.
He read more books on what plants and things in the woods that you can and can't eat. And, you know, like if you drop them in the middle of nowhere, he would be fine. Like he knows what trees you can eat the bark on and what plant would be good to eat and what berries you should or shouldn't eat. I used to always give him crap for when he was over here. He'd be showing my children, you know, you can eat this one and you can eat that. And I'm like, no, don't be eating them, you know. He knew, you know, so at the same time, I'm not big on feeding my kids tree bark. He was probably right. I just didn't at the time really care to hear it, you know.
Jason filled his time with projects. He once built a teepee and lived in it with his cats for a couple of months in the winter. One of Jason's many projects was turning his kayak into a sailboat. A few years back, Jason had gone kayaking and got stranded in a storm. He ended up having to spend the night in his kayak in an area called Crystal Cliffs until the storm passed.
He probably had his kayak that he left in for about, what, 3 years or so? I think he had it in the water twice before that.
In the summer of 2017, Jason was planning another trip with his kayak. As Kevin mentioned, Jason lived at his parents' old house, but he enjoyed spending time at the family's cottage in Cape George. This is where he began modifying his kayak.
The kayak usually was at his place where he stayed, and he got our dad to bring it down to the cottage because he had spent the last probably year and a half or more after his first voyage with the kayak, he wanted to put a sail on it. So he kind of did some research, and basically he built a sail. It looked just like one you would see on an old Viking ship. And everything that he put on that kayak, he built with stuff that was already at the cottage. He didn't bring anything extra down. Whatever he found around is what he made work, and we know it worked because it was still 100% intact and upright when it made it all the way across the bay. So, but he had planned, he was going to go and he had wanted to leave. He didn't tell anybody he was actually going to go, but he did tell Dad. I know Dad asked him, if you do plan to go, just leave me a note that says you're gone so that we're not in this situation we're in right now, not knowing, but that's what kind of makes it a little odd.
Jason relied heavily on his parents. They would do his shopping and give him rides to wherever he needed to go. His dad is the one who dropped Jason off at the cottage on the Thursday before he planned to go kayaking.
When Dad dropped him off, I think it was on a Thursday, I want to say, Dad asked him when he wanted him to come back and get him, and he told my dad, he said, I'll get a hold of you and I want you to come and get me. And Dad was, well, how are you going to get a hold of me? You don't have a phone, you know, I'll just come back. Like usually he would tell Dad to come back 4 days, 5 days or whatever, because he spent a lot of time at the cottage doing landscaping and just being alone and enjoying the cottage. And he told Dad, I'll get a hold of you when I'm ready for you to come back for me. And Dad's like, well, how are you going to do that? You don't have any way to get a hold of me. And he said, well, I'll get a hold of you when I need you to come and get me. And Dad said, yeah, okay, fine. And Dad was working in the area close to the cottage. So Dad went down, I think, that Saturday. And one of our friends was down there, an electrician. And he was working. And he had talked to Jason. And Jason was very excited because he was going to do his test run on his kayak to see if it was going to work better than it did a year and a half ago. And he was quite excited that he was going to get to try it out. He did try it, as far as we know he did anyway. But yeah, Dad was out on Saturday and talking to him. And then on Sunday, Dad called me and told me that Jason had left. He said he's positive that he's gone. The boat is gone and he's gone. So we went down to the cottage to see if we could find him. And we couldn't. And Dad was pretty, he was a little bit reluctant at first to get a hold of the RCMP because Jason wasn't a big fan of them. And, well, frankly, neither was my dad. But on Sunday, he just said, let's just wait and see if he does come back one more day. And if he's not back by Monday morning, Monday afternoon, we'll go file a missing persons report. And that's what we did Monday morning. Like, Jason's the kind of guy that he relied on Mom and Dad for everything. Like, they brought him his food, his tobacco. He didn't go out and get anything. He stayed at home and everything was brought to him. They picked him up and took him everywhere. You know, he was reclusive, so he didn't really... They took everything to him, basically, so he wouldn't have to do them things.
The RCMP, or the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, quickly began their search for Jason.
It didn't take long at all. I would say it was probably 3 hours at most by the time we left the RCMP detachment and they actually found the kayak. The Coast Guard was there with a Zodiac and the helicopters were out and they found the kayak on the beach. The guys off the Zodiac came back. They were loading up the boat. Like they didn't actually tell us. We went over, and me and my mother went over and talked to them, and they said that they had found it, and they found that there was a drag mark in the sand from where it got, it looked like it was dragged from the water's edge up onto the shore. Well, we were quite sure that he did make it. We did find out later that there was no actual sand there, so that wasn't even possible.
When they found Jason's kayak, the RCMP decided to focus their search for Jason on land, because the way that they found it suggested that Jason had made it to shore.
Like, everything that he had in his kayak was within, it was either in the kayak or within a 20-foot span of the kayak. To us, it seemed like the kayak made it, and everything was still all intact, and maybe water filled the thing up, and then the water, as the tide was going out, laid everything in that close. Like, his life jacket was laying right up against the boat. Things that, if it capsized way out, wouldn't land so close to each other, you know? It should all be scattered in a bigger area, but it was all really close. So that's why they concentrated on the land search at that time, because it didn't seem feasible that someone would get out. And he wasn't a suicidal person by any means, so it seemed like everything, including whoever was in it, made it to land. It was all upright and everything like that, so that's why they concentrated on their land search. They did the search on land for, on the fourth day, they did call it off. What happened, like, when the searchers called off the land search, we weren't really ready to stop that ourselves, so we continued to do it with family and friends, and the search and rescue gave us maps of everywhere that they had searched, so if we were going to continue, we weren't repeating where they had searched. So we used their maps to find where the kayak was, where it was found, I mean. And when the dive team came, they actually called us looking for the GPS coordinates of where the kayak was found, which we were never given at the time. All we had was a map, and we used the map of the search and rescue to locate on the shore so we could mark it for the RCMP so they would then know where to dive.
Months after Jason's disappearance, his family received information that has led them to believe that the divers had searched the wrong area for Jason.
It took months to get the photos from the RCMP. When we finally did get them, and you seen where they took photos of the kayak, we actually were not in the right area where the dive team, we told the dive team to go, was not the right area. And we tried to get the RCMP to go check the area with, because they actually did have GPS coordinates, and they wouldn't go back and look. So we thought that we're sure that they did not dive in the right, they were at least 1,000 feet off from where the kayak was found, where we told them. And they did tell us if something came up and changed, they would bring the dive team back. So to us, we thought that, you know, you're 1,000 feet off of where you looked, so maybe that should be a good reason to go back, but they wouldn't.
Since Jason went missing, only one person has come forward to say that they had seen him. Jason had left on Sunday, and his kayak was found on Tuesday. This eyewitness believes that he saw him on Monday.
When we were doing the search on land, there was one gentleman who was a bit older. He's probably in his 70s. And he was 100% confident when I talked to him on the telephone that he had seen Jason in his kayak in Troy, which is, and he was heading towards Port Hood, like he said, a quarter of a mile. He was about a quarter of a mile off of shore in his kayak heading towards Port Hood. And that was on Monday morning because he was taking his wife to work. And when he got back home, he said that his wife called him up and told him that there was a missing person in a kayak. The reason he remembered it is because he asked his wife, what was that thing out there? And she said, oh, I don't know, it looks like a little sailboat. And he said that he was looking at it, and he said, that's the smallest sailboat I've ever seen in my life. So he said it looked really odd. And he said he could definitely see someone in the kayak, and they were, like, bent over. And he would have had to bend over, like, lay down on his face, basically, with the sail that he had so he could see underneath it, so he could see where he's going. He was very adamant, though, that he was in the boat and heading towards Port Hood that morning when he seen the boat.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable. And you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished. One of the items that was recovered from Jason's kayak was a camera. His family was given copies of four photos that Jason had taken from his kayak.
There were a couple decent RCMP officers who actually, that's where them photos on Facebook came from, is they actually sent them to us. They gave us copies that they had printed off of photos they thought we would want that were relevant, and that's all. We never actually did get the memory card with the photos on it and his toothbrush and his hairbrush, I think. They still have that stuff. They told us this was the date that was on the photo. Those were taken Sunday afternoon, is what we were told.
Jason's family decided to release the photos to the public with the hope that someone would recognize the landscape. Maybe if they could figure out where Jason had been, it would get them one step closer to finding him. Just recently, the RCMP released the items that they had found with Jason's kayak back to his family. They were surprised to see just how much supplies Jason had packed for what they thought was just supposed to be a short test run.
The RCMP gave us the stuff back this week, or last week there, of everything that he had with him. And he had enough stuff with him that he would be good for probably 2 months or more that he had taken with him. He had everything from food to sewing kits and first aid kits. And I'm still a little baffled on how he got it all in the kayak. He had so much stuff. So everything that you would need to basically live, he had with him, you know?
When you look at Jason's case and remember that he had a desire to go live on a deserted island, it makes you wonder about some of the small islands in the area.
Like Jason always, like I say, wanted to go live on a deserted island, basically, and directly between where he left and where we found the kayak pretty well is Henry's Island, and it's a private island, and they did a perimeter search with their helicopters because it was a private island. They didn't want to intrude. And the day that he left was one of the hottest days we had that year. It was over 35 degrees that day. And we know all he had was one 4-liter jug of water. So if he was out there on that water for the whole day, he might have made it to Henry's Island, and he could have got off the boat. And then the boat did take off on him, you know, because according to what we were told, the day he left, the wind would have taken him straight to Henry's Island from our cottage. But then later that day, the wind did change, and it would have taken him from Henry's Island direction right over to where the kayak was found. There's also Port Hood Island is very close to Henry's Island, so it is populated with people. There's not a lot of people on it. I think there's probably about 40 houses, and there's a couple people that do live there year-round. And that wasn't looked at all. There was nobody that went to Port Hood Island. It's quite a bit bigger than Henry's Island. We did get to talk to the caretaker on Henry's Island, and he told us that, I guess there's supposedly sensors over there that go off if somebody is on the island, but we weren't really ever guaranteed that. We had people go over there and the sensors didn't go off. We weren't concerned with getting permission under the circumstances, you know. We had our own people go over and look, and when they went over, no sensors went off. We know that because we spoke to the caretaker, and, well, we just felt around him, and he didn't. No alarms went off, so, yeah, we had two people over there for the entire day, so.
When Kevin was telling me about the searches that were conducted with helicopters, I was wondering if they had used helicopters that were equipped with heat-sensing technology. Those helicopters have been used to help locate people stranded in the wilderness, and even fugitives, by detecting what our eyes can't see, and that's heat sources on the ground. Unfortunately, Kevin told me that he didn't believe that that kind of technology had been used to help find Jason. Even though Jason had talked about his dream of going to live on a deserted island, his family doesn't think that he would just walk away from them, especially his parents.
It's possible, but I don't think he would have left without his food and stuff. He took enough stuff that I think that we wouldn't have found. There should have been less things with the boat, if that was true, I think. You know, to take all that stuff with him, if he had planned to disappear, I think we wouldn't have got as much stuff back.
Kevin told me that the day Jason left was one of the hottest days of the year. It was about 35 degrees Celsius or 95 degrees Fahrenheit. It's important to note that Jason couldn't swim, but he did have a life jacket with him, which was found next to the kayak. Kevin wonders if Jason could have removed his life jacket due to the heat.
He did wear his life jacket, though. I mean, Jason he's not a stupid person, so as uncomfortable and hot as it would have been, it's hard to say if he had it on. If he didn't have it on, I'm not sure how it ended up laying beside the kayak all the way across that water, unless it was taken off whenever he got out of the boat right there. And, like, by the time he got closer to the Port Hood side, he was probably feeling quite comfortable with his abilities by that point because, you know, I mean, that's a long way to come. You know, if he made it that far, he'd be feeling, I know I would, I'd be like, well, I can see shore now. Time to take this thing off. That's what I think, anyway.
Kevin has come up with a possible scenario for what may have happened to Jason.
We did find out from one of the locals, they did tell us that, like, where the boat was found, there is a sandbar off of that. So that kind of gave us a little bit of, we were kind of confused when we found that out, because it is possible maybe they did see drag marks in the sand when the tide went out. But we never could confirm that because we couldn't get them to go back and look. If there was a sandbar there and it was late maybe and he got there, we said, well, maybe the boat could have got stuck on that, and he would have thought that at night, and he had no light with him, maybe he thought that he was on shore because he could feel sand in the water under him. And if he got out of the boat there, no life jacket on, he could have been walking thinking he's on close to shore, and then he dropped into a sinkhole, or, you know, like a, where there's no sandbar anymore. And that's why we wanted them to go back, and they didn't search the right spot where the kayak was found.
When Jason's kayak was located, the RCMP collected all of the supplies that he had with him. We know that Jason was reclusive, and his family said that he's paranoid of strangers. They do think it's possible that he would have hidden from strangers who were searching for him. Their concern was that if he did hide, and then the RCMP took all of his supplies, he would have had nothing. They came up with a plan to put food out for him.
We were still quite hopeful that he had made it. But now we know that we took everything that he took to survive. So we did take food and stuff, and we put them in bags and tied them to the trees near the kayak area and put trail cams there. And a week and a half later, we went back and one of the bags was gone, but there was no photos on the camera. So we tied it on enough that, like, an animal could have taken it, but there would have been pieces of the bag still tied to the tree. And there wasn't, so it was almost like somebody had untied the bag. But then again, we were being very optimistic and hopeful that we were going to find him, so it could be us just hopeful. Our cousin, this is what he does. He goes searching for people all the time. It was his suggestion on how to tie them and where to tie them, and we were, yep, that sounds great to us. So, and when I told him that the bag was gone, he said that there's no way an animal took that bag. They're more interested in what's in the bag. They'd rip the bag open and take the stuff out of it, maybe, he said. But, like, they wouldn't have untied the bag and carried the bag away with everything in it. And that's basically what happened.
It's strange that the food disappeared and nothing was caught on camera. I asked Kevin if he thought that someone else could have taken it.
It's a really small community, and they were more than happy to be as helpful as they could. Like, you get in these little places in Nova Scotia and people, like, part of their family almost is missing. And, you know, when they had nothing to do, people were walking down the beach, you know. So we'd run into people that we didn't know, and they'd start telling us what they were doing. And, yeah, we knew what they were doing because we were doing the same thing. There was notes on the bag, too, that said, Jason, you're not in trouble. We just want you to get a hold of your mom and dad and let them know you're okay. So I don't think anybody would have taken that bag, and just to be, I mean, there's always people that are cruel out there, but it's a bit of a walk to get to, and you'd have to know that they were there to begin with, and then to take it. I think the way to look at it is only nice people are going down on the beach to help us find my brother, so I don't think they would take the bag with the note wrote on it and stuff.
The other mystery of the food is why nothing was picked up on the trail cam. The trail cam did take photos of Kevin when he went back to check the food, but that was all.
That was the first time I ever used the trail cam, and I was quite sure I had it set up right. It did take pictures of me when I went down to check the bags, I know that, so I'm just not really sure why it didn't take a picture.
One thing that Kevin expressed to me is that the RCMP has kept them in the dark for the most part. They did get Jason's belongings back, but they don't know if the RCMP has received any tips.
The RCMP doesn't really tell us anything. Like, it's an open missing persons case to them, so they can't tell us anything, and they won't tell us anything. So if they get 10 calls a day, that they keep that to themselves. They don't tell anybody anything until something is found. It's not the greatest system here.
Jason's family has gone out many times to search along the shore for him, and now they're waiting for the ice to melt to begin looking again.
Well, right now, in all honesty, we're kind of grasping at straws on things because, I mean, we really don't know. the problem is the ocean is kind of big, and the ocean is kind of relatively good at self-cleaning, and we're going to do a walk basically from the Cape George Lighthouse and follow the shore all the way around to Fort Hood and see if anything has come up over the winter. We're just kind of waiting for ice to melt. Like, you know, there's lots of ice down there and it fills the shores. I don't want big blocks of ice to be hiding things that I might otherwise see. We have done that walk from where we found his kayak. It's probably about a 3-kilometer walk where we can start at the wharf in Port Hood, which is close to where the kayak was found. We've walked that probably 15 to 20 times, all of us, just keep walking back and forth.
So what happened to Jason McGrath after he left in his kayak on July 9th, 2017? What we do know is that he left Cape George on Sunday the 9th. To get from where he set sail in Cape George to Port Hood, that would have been about a 22-mile trip across St. George's Bay. The two islands that Kevin had mentioned, Henry Island and Port Hood Island, are just off the coast of Port Hood. Jason's kayak was found by the RCMP several miles down the coast in the Judique area. The RCMP believed that Jason had made it to shore because of how far his kayak was pulled out of the water, and also because his belongings were found around his kayak. It appeared as though someone had unpacked it. The thought is that if the kayak had capsized, Jason's supplies would have been much more scattered. Since finding Jason's kayak, there have been no other sightings of him. His family is concerned that if he did make it to land, he may have hid from the searchers because he was wary of strangers. Since they took all of his supplies when the kayak was found, he could have been left there with nothing. We know that Jason did spend a lot of time studying survival skills and knew what plants he could and couldn't eat. Could Jason have survived the winter? One thing that I wondered about was, remember Kevin saying how much supplies Jason had with him for what he stated was just supposed to be a test run? Was he being overly cautious because last time he went out in the kayak, he got stuck in a storm? We know Jason had always dreamed of living on a deserted island. Could he have been planning a longer trip and just didn't tell anyone? When his dad asked Jason when he should come back for him, he would only say that he would get in touch when he was ready. But Jason didn't have a phone, and there was no phone at their cottage. His family doesn't believe that he would intentionally put them through this, but it does make you wonder. It's also quite possible that Jason could have become the victim of an unfortunate accident. We know that he didn't have his life jacket on when he disappeared, since that was found with his kayak. Could Jason have made it back to shore and then went back in the water, possibly to cool off since it was so hot? Maybe he slipped or, as Kevin suggested, stepped off of the sandbar into much deeper water. It's always strange when someone who has dreamed of living alone in the wilderness just disappears. There certainly are some aspects of Jason's disappearance that make you wonder. When I was considering all the different scenarios in this case, I was trying to put myself in Jason's shoes. I couldn't just look at it like, what would I do in this situation? I had to look at it more like, what would Jason do, since he was such a reclusive person? The idea that he may have hidden from searchers does complicate things. Jason's family has some questions for those who may live in the area or may have been in the area around the time of his disappearance. Do you have any trail cameras or security cameras that you could review? Did you find any unopened cans of food along the coastline? There were clothes found with Jason's belongings, so it's possible that he may have only had swim trunks on when he disappeared. Did you have any items of clothing go missing from a clothesline around that time? Did you find a kayak floating and pull it up out of the water? Jason's family is very realistic about the possibility that he may have drowned, but without knowing for sure, they feel as though they can't just stop looking for him. If you have any information about the disappearance of Jason McGrath, please contact the RCMP at 902-863-6500, or you can call Crime Stoppers at 1-800-222-8477. If you would like to contact Jason's family or just follow his case on social media, you can find them on Facebook at Searching for Jason McGrath. That brings us to the end of episode 120. I'd like to thank Kevin and his sister Janice for helping me with this episode. If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. If you'd like to contact me, there's a page and a discussion group on Facebook. I'm on Twitter at thevanishedpod and also on Instagram. If you enjoy the show, subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, Wondery.com, or wherever you're listening right now. Do you want to help support The Vanished? There are a couple things that you can do. Rate and review on Apple Podcasts. Your 5-star reviews really go a long way and help more people find the show. Another way to help is to fill out a short survey at Wondery.com/survey. Join me next week. I'll be covering a case from Illinois. Thanks for listening.
When we seen what he had with him, I don't know if I would have even been looking on land. I think we could have maybe focused more on the water. If he had every single thing with him as found, if he's walking around basically naked. So what's he got with him? It's all kind of odd. The only thing that didn't get found beside the kayak is him.
It's all a lighthearted nightmare on our podcast, Morbid.
We're your hosts. I'm Alina Urquhart.
And I'm Ash Kelly.
And our show is part true crime, part spooky, and part comedy.
The stories we cover are well-researched.
He claimed and confessed to officially killing up to 28 people.
With a touch of humor.
I'd just like to go ahead and say that if there's no band called Malevolent Deity,
that is pretty great.
A dash of sarcasm and just garnished a bit with a little bit of cursing.
This motherfucker lied.
Like a liar.
Like a liar.
And if you're a weirdo like us and love to cozy up to a creepy tale of the paranormal,
or you love to hop in the Wayback Machine and dissect the details of some of history's most notorious crimes,
you should tune in to our podcast, Morbid. Follow Morbid on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to episodes early and ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
Business can mean a lot of things. For some, it's earning reports, the top MBA program, investments, but business isn't everything we do. Side hustles that explode into the next billion-dollar company.
I need to create my own product that I control what the marketing is for.
Unconventional ideas that change the world we live in.
AI is everywhere, with venture capital pouring in.
From Elon Musk,
he took a massive axe and swung it through Twitter's workforce.
To Taylor Swift,
she is unstoppable as her Eras Tour stimulated local economy.
Your favorite coffee shop down the street to the vacation house you rented last weekend. Whatever business means to you, Wondery is the destination for business podcasts. Listen to top business shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, The Best One Yet, Business Movers, and many more. Everything from top daily news.
There was more ranch dressing sold last year than ketchup and barbecue sauce.
We're buying the dip, literally.
To deep dives on the biggest successes and failures of our time.
20,000 people lost their jobs.
Wondery means business.